Please go ahead. The call is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's IRTP call on Tuesday the 4th of May, we have Michele Melon, Chris Chaplow, Kevin Erdmann, James Bladel, Paul Diaz, Barbara Steele, Matt Sterlin. From staff, we have Olof Nordling, Marika Konings, David Geezer, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Mikey O'Connor, Emile George, and Baudouin Chambet. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. And if I could just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Michele.
All right. Thanks. And thanks to James for doing a wonderful job, as usual, last week. He always puts me to shame. Now, you should all have received an updated draft of the proposed ETRP, and also I would back Marika's comment about the lowercase e versus the uppercase e. So the uppercase e, I'd agree, in Europe, uppercase e makes a lot more sense. Have you all had a chance to look over the latest draft, which is also on the meeting room Adobe thing? Anybody have any questions or comments?
Chris here. Can I start with just a petty comment, seeing as we're talking about acronyms, we've just changed an acronym.
All we did was change the case sensitivity, Chris.
Yeah, that's fine. The one I'm questioning is the PTR little r. I'm suggesting it should be PTR little a.
Hold on. Where is this exactly, Chris?
Lots of places. Try 3.3.
It's throughout the documents and beginning in 3.1.
Okay, what is PTR little r? Is that defined somewhere?
Yes, in 3.1, it's the pre-transfer registrar. And Chris, just that was certainly not a well thought out decision on my part. It's just that R is often used to distinguish a registrar from RY, which is typically used to indicate a registry. But certainly not, you know, married to that convention. It's just something that I borrow from other groups.
Yeah, it's just that RA is more popularly used. So I was just bringing a little bit more consistency into it. That was all.
I would suggest that we, you know, have just PTR.
Why do we need the R or the A?
Well, there's been a convention for RA for registrar and RY for registry used in various other places.
Okay, the only problem I see with PTR by itself is that I will start thinking about PTR records and DNS.
Right, pointers.
Yeah.
So I'm suggesting PTR little a.
So you're suggesting PTR. Okay, guys, whichever makes you happy. Personally, I'd say whatever works. Though I don't like PTR by itself for the obvious reason that I'm thinking psychologically. I'm just thinking about DNS records. Does anybody have an issue with PTRA? No? Okay. On a side note, just to... Yeah, okay, actually, I'll come back to it. I haven't really dialed in yet. Okay. So PTRA, you would prefer as an option for that, Chris, yes?
To be more consistent with other things that I'm monitoring,
okay,
yes.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. James, are you happy with that change?
No strong feelings.
Okay, fine. Right, so does anybody oppose the change? Okay. Okay, so we'll make that change then. Right. Any other things regarding to acronyms or anything like that anybody would like to change at this juncture? No. Okay. Any other comments on this document, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. There were a number of email exchanges on a number of points by both Kevin and Michael, and I asked them whether they were willing to submit language so we can include that. And just wanted to know whether I think Michael did send a note to the list, and I just wanted to know if that's forthcoming or what the plan is.
I think Michael said he was working on some draft language, I think. Is that correct, Michael?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
I apologize for not having it ready yet. It was, it's, I'm just not, I've been busy, sorry.
Who hasn't? Don't worry, it's fine. I think everybody suffers from that. I'm suffering from bank holidays. Okay, then. There was some... Let's have a look at what was there. Just bear me 1 second. There were a couple of things in relation to this. There was one thing in relation to the identification from Kevin. Is Kevin on? Kevin isn't on this call today, though, is he?
I am.
Oh, you are. Sorry. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Okay. Okay. You were suggesting some kind of token system, from what I can gather?
The thought is that since ICANN is defining the process, ICANN could define how to prove identity for a registrar rather than depending on, you know, who knows what national law might apply to, and, you know, the vagaries of how different countries recognize non-human individual legal entities. So my thought is that, you know, it could be something that is very technologically sophisticated with encryption and things like that, or it could just simply be a code that is, you know, sent directly to the registrant just for that purpose of showing their entitlement to the domain that just got registered.
Okay. Michael Collins?
Yes, to Kevin. Would this allow for a transfer of the control of the name to another entity? It sounds like that part of it might get complicated, and I'm not sure how that would work. Do you have any more information about something like that?
Well, it depends on what we would want that token to be used for. I mean, if you just say its only use is to prove entitlement to this ETRP procedure, so that, you know, if there is a new, you know, a transfer of registrant, that they could, you know, transfer that certificate, or, you know, I mean, there's different ways one could handle it that would go beyond sort of the scope of what we're proposing here. But my point is that if we want to have a quick and easy way to resolve this potential problem, we need to, you know, have all the mechanisms be pretty quick and straightforward, so that the registrar can you know, take immediate action.
Okay. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this? No? David?
I'm not certain what system ICANN could use to transmit such a code. And, you know, and perhaps the task is a bit bigger at the moment than the scope of the working group. But clearly it ought to be something that ICANN compliance and the registrar liaison team investigate and perhaps then report back on the feasibility of doing something along the lines that Kevin's suggesting. But to do that, Kevin, we'd really need some sort of written, position from you that I could use, for clarity purposes when I discuss that with the registrar liaison team.
I think Kevin posted to the list yesterday with an overview of what he was proposing.
Yeah, is there any need to update that, Kevin, based on what you're suggesting during the call today?
I'd be happy to write it up a little more formally than the informal discussions. What I was going to propose a couple of changes to the draft policy addressing the items that I mentioned, so I can include that when I circulate those proposed changes.
Yep. Why don't you go ahead and do that, and then let me chat with my IT colleagues and with Tim Cole, and see if there's some approach here that would make sense, given the resource constraints that we're currently operating under.
Yeah, and another thing would be I don't know that it's something that would require a one size fits all solution. It could be a measure of how much a particular registrar wanted to do it. It might be as simple as just a 8-character string, or it could be some more sophisticated public key encryption token of some sort. So. But I'll write that up, circulate it next few days.
Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on this? Okay. Right. The next item on there, we were looking anyway at the updated reverse policy. If anybody has any other input on this, I think it would be good if we could try and use the mailing list as much as possible. I emailed the list about this yesterday, and I don't know whether it was just a coincidence, but I noticed that there was a little bit more activity on us between yesterday and this morning. Probably a coincidence.
It was an inspiration.
Thank you.
I was. That makes me feel better. Basically, look, we're all working under lots of different pressures and time constraints and God knows what else. If you're not, well, good luck to you, but I think that most of us are. So if we can thrash things out, sending quick and nasty emails, I'm perfectly happy with those. I'm not interested in reading the greatest works of William Shakespeare. I probably won't read it all anyway, because I'll probably get bored after a few lines. So short and to the point works for me. Matt Mansell, I think, will be joining this call a bit later on. But just want to take this opportunity to thank Bob Mountain for joining the group. Bob, why don't you introduce yourself to the group?
Yeah, I'm Bob Mountain. I run business development for Name Media, based in just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. So, thanks for having me in the group, and looking forward to participating.
Well, thank you, Bob. What was it? Issue A, Issue B, Issue C. One of the things that somebody pinged me about off list was in relation to the issues that we're meant to be addressing. And one, the thing that they felt was that we had addressed a couple of the issues quite comprehensively, but we seem to have ignored one or two of the issues. My reply to that was that, this is something we needed to obviously tackle and deal with, and obviously people have stronger feelings about some issues than they do about others. But if people feel that we're not addressing issues, please, use the mailing list or interrupt me, put up hands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I think if people look at the draft initial report, I think it's quite obvious where there's still holes, especially when we look at recommendations. And I think that's one of the main issues that stands between between now and the 31st of May in trying to get this report done in time for a publication for the ICANN meeting in Brussels. So, you know, just to support what Michaela says, I think it would be great if people can look at those different sections and you know, start drafting options for considerations or recommendations that then can be, you know, posted on the mailing list and hopefully, you know, discussed or further refined in that way, because I think the issues report, you know, covers in quite some detail the discussions that the group has had on these different issues. And I think for some, there are some, you know, suggestions that have been made during those discussions that are incorporated in the report. But I think that the group needs some further time to, you know, I think issue A, you know, we have even a very detailed policy that we're considering of incorporating. But I think for the other issues, we don't have that much detail yet on potential recommendations that we want to put out for community discussion.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I mean, basically, guys, look, if you have an idea, if you have a recommendation, even if it's just something kind of vague and just kind of like, you know, I like the idea of doing X, or I like the idea of doing something else, or I don't like that, just chuck it in an email to the list. Some people are, there are other people who will be able to take that and turn it into something much more flowery and everything, but let's just get some stupid ideas and throw them at it, and then we'll get some wonderful ideas and whatever. I mean, just, you know, share your thoughts. Let's get some movement on this. Okay, let's have a look at this. Right, okay, the updated expedited transfer reversal policy is incorporated into the draft report. Okay, so with the minor changes that were suggested with regards to the acronyms that Chris was talking about, okay? And also as well, I think in this final draft here, there's just a suggestion that maybe ICANN staff could give a better overview of the historical sequence of IRTP. What else do we have here? Section 2.5. The note here saying this section should be expanded to demonstrate why existing methods are deficient. Would referencing the ESSAC reports suffice, do you think? Or do we need to go into more detail? Anybody? James?
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I think that would be sufficient, possibly, if we can just note that the incidence of hijacking is still a problem.
Okay, so I mean, if we could just I'm just trying to do is just quite, rather than us getting bogged down
right.
In trying to, you know, write some great flowery thing where we can just say, look, hey, if there's problems, I see the ESSAC reports and reference the ones that are there. Okay. Any other additions? Are there any other additions or changes that we need to make to this before we can just kind of combine it back in?
Well, we're just pending some additional language from Michael and Kevin.
Okay. Well, let's work on
the
basis. List. Okay. So that look. Let's move this forward. We can add this as soon as anything from anybody else is forthcoming, it can be added on. But the actual document we have here, as it stands, should be okay, if you know what I mean, if that kind of makes sense. Okay, now, let's see, give me one second. Sorry, my head's all over the place. Today being Tuesday after a bank holiday in Ireland, it feels like Monday. Okay, the identification thing, we're going to have a follow-up on that on the list from Kevin. On the issue D, the recommendations when a lock is used. Does anybody have any thoughts on this at present?
Michaela, this is Marika. Would you like me to pull up the draft of the initial report so people can see what is there for the different issues at the moment?
Yes, that would be very helpful. Thank you, Marika.
Michaela, can you repeat exactly where we are again? I apologize, I got lost.
Sorry, I've been jumping around the place a little bit. It was in relation to the issue D on locking.
Listen, Marika, issue D is covered on pages 27 and 28. And if you look at the preliminary conclusions there, there's one suggestion there that was discussed in relation to the public comments received, which doesn't specifically address the charter question, but was raised, and that was one of the suggestions that were made by the working group at that point.
Right, I'm just trying to view this.
I can ping the document if you want, so everyone.
I was just trying to. Oh, okay. Could you just increase the magnif? Oh, you've left go again. All right, hold on. Okay, so for example, we have there's a couple of things here, readily and reasonable. Okay, so I mean, do people have any other thoughts on this at this time?
And this is Marika again, because one, as you'll see in the text, one of the ideas that was discussed in relation to this issue as well is the including of messages in relation to the status value, what we discussed with Scott Hollenbach. And we haven't drafted a specific recommendation around that, but that might be an area where we had discussion, and I think there was as well some support in possibly exploring that further to make clearer what is implied with a certain status value, and might help as well clarify to registrants what a lock status means or how they can actually go about unlocking it.
Okay, well, I'm going to take my hat as chair off for a moment. Just personally, as a registrar and also as a registrant, I would find it very helpful if when somebody does a WHOIS lookup on a domain name, I can know with certitude whether the domain is locked, be that internally at the registrar level, at the registry level, or whatever, for whatever reason. If there's a lock of any kind, I should be able to see that in WHOIS. I shouldn't have to wait to be told afterwards that the registrar has some internal procedure or process or whatever. But the problem at the moment, as I understand it, is that the current policy restricts the use of the lock, so that if, for example, I as a registrar wanted to restrict a transfer due to a number of valid reasons, I couldn't do so by putting a lock flag. I'd have to knack the transfer request. And if I didn't do it that way, I could run it fall foul of David. I think this is something that needs to be looked at. Chris put up his hand in agreement, so at least somebody agrees with me. Does anybody disagree with me? Okay. No, nobody disagrees with me. And welcome, Matt. Nice to see you on the call as well. Okay, so I'll throw an email to the list about what I think, and then you can all argue with me about it. Okay, then. This thing about readily accessible, reasonable means, this has come up a few times within this working group and elsewhere, I think. Do we need to define that, and how clearly do we need to define it? Does anybody have any thoughts on that? Okay, Matt, and then Marika. Right, actually, let Marika go first, since she's a lady.
Yes,
Marika,
okay.
Go ahead, please.
Thanks for that. Just to note, I think in the context of discussion around the same terms in another working group, some suggestions were made that in sort of trying to define what clearly and readily available means, the working group might as well consider giving examples of what it means and what it doesn't mean, because maybe a definition might be difficult or as well difficult to enforce. And I guess there maybe the question is, well, for David, what kind of clarification would help the compliance team in deciding whether it fits the criteria or not?
Well, I mean, just as David is here, David, what do you understand it to mean?
Well, unfortunately, it's a bit of a legal interpretation. You know, reasonable is there are different points of view on what's reasonable, and so I think having examples, to Marika's point, would probably be the best approach. Because if I were to take this into ICANN legal, I think they would resist the notion of trying to lock down definition around readily accessible and reasonable, and essentially leave it open for interpretation through the business conduct of the parties. So I would favor the idea of some examples and use that as sort of the least restrictive approach in terms of getting, you know, some clarity on this phrase.
Okay. Mass?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. I was actually pretty much what I was going to say, in that, you know, maybe instead of defining readily and reasonable, that we give some examples, such as, you know, using a web interface or calling into a customer support line, and also give some time frames too. Like, you know, a registrant should expect that a lock would be removed within, you know, 24 hours, for example, or something like that, just to give folks reading this some idea of what at least this group thinks readily and reasonable might mean.
Okay. Do any of you have any, how can I say, any kind of examples in that you can think of that you would be able to share? You don't have to answer that immediately. What I'm saying is, if you could share them with the list, this would be very, very helpful. So that if we can, anybody has any suggestions, I'm going to pop an email to the list shortly afterwards with a couple of things that I'm going to be asking you all to share with everybody else. So just even your whatever suggestions would be welcome. Yes, Marika.
This is Marika. It's not specifically on this issue, so anyone wants to comment on that, they should go first.
Well, go on, Marika.
They're all
being very shy this afternoon.
Yeah, because I see that we've now moved on to issue E, and I just wanted to point out as well that there the working group did consider some new language that was proposed by the registry stakeholder group. So I'm just wondering if that language needs further review and whether there's support for putting it forward as a recommendation, or, you know, with, because I know there was some concern, I think, in relation to the time frame that was proposed in that language. So the question is, does the group want to look further at that, or you know, look at the original language and see if there's any way of you know, clarifying that, or what's the question?
This is the bit you've got in red on the on that sheet there, yes?
On page 28 at the bottom.
Right. Well, okay. I one thing I would suggest there is, instead of calendar days, there'd be working days. That's just me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Now, I know that there would be differences between working days, between countries and everything else, but let's just say, for argument's sake, that yesterday was a bank holiday here in Ireland. I think last Friday would have been a public holiday in a lot of European countries. And, you know, Semana Santa in Spain is a complete write-off. You know, depending on the country, where I prefer working days as opposed to calendar days. That's just my own personal preference, and you can all reject it or accept it or otherwise. Marika, you still have your hand up?
Oh, sorry. No, I'll take that down. But so you are supporting the rest of the language that is put forward, or is this something that maybe I should put again to the mailing list so people can comment on it in that way?
Well, I would, whatever you're more comfortable with. But I mean, I think people, we need to. Okay, I'll put it this way. If you could just post that snippet of text to the list, and if anybody has any strong feelings about it one way or the other, let them make those feelings known on the list as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'll put it together then with the current language so people can, you know, see where the difference lies and is there agreement to change the calendar days to business days? Do I change that already?
Well, I would say working days, not business days.
Working days.
That's me. Me personally, I think. Does anybody disagree with that change?
Here, Kelly. The only thing that I would ask is maybe for David to comment. Does that run contrary to what other language states about working or calendar days? And does it matter if it does?
Yep. Short answer is no. I think five working days would work in this instance.
Okay. And yeah, I'm 110% behind it.
Okay. Does anybody oppose it? Does anybody have an issue with it? You're not going to suddenly turn around and throw a spanner in the works in about 3 days. Come on. Now it's time. Say something. No? Okay, fine. Nobody's rejecting that, so we'll change it to five working days. Marika.
Okay. Not to the list then in combination with the current language, so people can provide their input on whether they would like to put that forward as a recommendation for change to the consensus policy from this group.
Okay. Barbara.
Hi, it's Barbara. I just have a quick question with regard to the working days. Is there some place that you can easily get a list of what are working days in the various countries? Because I anticipate that registry operators may very well get complaints regarding this. And to the extent that they do, obviously, you know, registry operators are dealing with registrars all around the world. And so it would just be, from an administrative standpoint, easier if we had something to reference to let us know what are working days in whatever country that has jurisdiction over the domain name.
Well, timeanddate.com, I think, is a pretty good reference.
Kelly,
anybody know? Go ahead.
Yeah, just a suggestion for Barbara if she anticipates that might be a source of confusion. Some country codes and other businesses will request that we send them the holiday calendar that we observe, and so perhaps rather than Verisign taking on the burden of that task, maybe push that out to your registrars and ask them to submit the calendar that they observe.
Okay, good suggestion. Thank you.
James, do you have your hand up? Do you have anything else to add?
I'm lowering it as fast as I can.
Ah, James, you don't have to be paranoid. Paul?
Hey, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean we're coming after you. Thanks, Michele. Look, you know, it just seems to me it's going to be kind of administratively cumbersome for everybody to feed the registries what their calendar, their holiday calendars are, and maybe just another tack for this is what if you change go back to calendar days, but pick a number that's big enough that it would basically have the same effect of five working days at a minimum. You know, throw it back to, I don't know, 10 calendar days. So that way you don't have to worry about weekends and a long weekend because of some holiday and all the rest. I can't imagine ourselves feeding all the various registry operators, here's the calendar that we follow, and more importantly, the registries, you know, trying to make heads or tails of that when you've got hundreds upon hundreds of registrars.
Anybody else have anything to say? No? Okay. Noted. I disagree with you, Paul, but noted. Michael Collins?
Well, since you made that comment, I'll say that sounds... I agree with Paul. It sounds like a reasonable accommodation.
The reason I disagree is that if we're making the period longer, then it's probably not helping the registrant too much. That's the only reason that I would have an issue with it. I prefer the idea of the shorter period. Marika, then Matt.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to suggest that I can put both options in the email and ask for people's feedback on that. And I mean, if there's no clear support for either or from the working group, there's always the option of putting that back as well to the community and suggest the two options and see what feedback is received and, you know, decide in the second phase of this working group or try to find a compromise in the second phase of the working group on you know, which time frame to pick.
Okay, thanks. Matt?
Yeah, that's a good idea, Marika. I think I, in principle, would agree with Paul, but I'd also agree with Michele in that I think 10 days is way too long, so I think if we were going to keep it as calendar days, I would actually vote for making it shorter, so something like 3 calendar days. But I agree, if you make it 10, you know, then that doesn't serve the registrants at all.
Yeah, I
love that.
I mean, let's, okay, look, I have my view, other people have their views. Like if Marika puts both wordings there, then maybe we'll have, I mean, there's no reason why we can't have a kind of, what's the word, a split, the hell do you call that? A split decision, if there's a proper word for that, which I can't find at the moment. Paul Diaz and then Michael Collins.
Yeah, thanks, Michele. And I just wanted to emphasize, I'm in absolute agreement with you that a shorter time frame. I was merely suggesting it to remove any sort of administrative burden that could become realistically an issue later on. You know, if the goal is to push, now we're talking perhaps 3 calendar days versus 5 working days, whatever the number is, I agree, you know, push it down, but just the idea of going back to calendar days was just to avoid the administrative confusion. I mean, hell, we still can't get, you know, time straight scheduling these meetings. I can only imagine how many mistakes or how much confusion there will be when we try and factor in holidays throughout the world. That was the only suggestion. I threw 10 out as a number just to make sure that you would have that 5 working days that you'd initially mentioned. If you want to push it down, by all means, that's fine by us.
Oh, that's okay. That's cool. Michael?
Well, I think that Paul may have just helped me out, but I wanted to clarify that my support of Paul's statement was I thought he was using 10 as an example, not as stating the the amount of days. But that just in general, working with calendar days is going to be simpler. Thank you.
Okay. Matt, do you have anything else to add?
Nope, sorry, I'm lowering.
Okay, I can see the paranoia. Chris?
Yeah, Chris speaking. Just reminding or remembering everybody that the holidays, the working day holidays, are not national. They're also regional and local. And we can quite easily get 4 calendar days holiday in a run if we go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's just a reminder on that point. And then it does occur to me whether one might choose a registrar based on the number of the calendar that they might publish or publish on their website, and whether they have 4 days in a run at any point.
That's an interesting question. I mean, okay, let's just say, for example, if we were to, is there any way we could word it that would exclude Saturday and Sunday? But then what you do is Friday a working day in Israel? Or is that, which day is, or is that their Saturday? I can never remember. Or is that even possible? Chris, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we have weekday and weekend, don't we? That's how we define it in the West. I mean, I tend to like working day, and I initially agreed with you. But I'm just conscious if we're talking of 3 calendar days, we can go over that. But that's under the 4. You could come back on a registrar could come back on a Monday morning and find it all over now.
True. Okay. Paul.
Thanks, Michele. I'm kind of sorry I opened this can of worms, but I believe we're overthinking this. I mean, if there's the possibility of a 4-day weekend somewhere, why not just say 5 calendar days? Worst case, that means, you know, a registrar is going to have 1 working day after such a long holiday to deal with it. Too bad. It is what it is. And, you know, the 5 calendar days realistically is going to mean 3 working days at a minimum for in most circumstances, you know, factoring weekends and whatnot. My whole goal was just to try and simplify this. I think we're kind of getting a little down in the weeds.
But this is an ICANN working group. How could you possibly suggest that an ICANN working group will get tangled up? I'm shocked, Paul.
Yeah, but Michele, this is one of the functional ones. Let's just get through it.
Sorry, couldn't resist that. Chris, you still have your hand up?
Sorry, no, it was left up. I'll take it down.
That's okay. I think we are probably getting a little bit bogged down on this. Let's put something on the list, and then we can somehow reach some kind of compromise that everybody's happy with. That's fine. Let's just move forward. Does anybody else have any strong feelings on that section? No? Okay.
Just one other point is I know that I think Mikey isn't on the call and then just been in the last week because I think he's busy with the BI working group. But as a chair of the NILES working group, I actually asked him to provide some feedback to the group on what that group actually discussed. I know they passed the ball forward and didn't deal with the issue, but they did discuss it in great detail. So I'll ping him again to see if there's anything else he would like to share in that regard, just to make sure that we didn't forget anything about what they already discussed and covered in that working group.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Marika. All right, so just looking at the different issues. Oh, excuse me. We haven't got any conclusions, though, for any of the issues. Do we need to get conclusions at this stage, Marika?
This week, I think it would be good to, if not conclusions, have options.
Okay.
Are you looking at the last chapter, or are you looking at just the individual?
I'm looking at the individual issue bits.
Yeah, I think it would be good because that's probably the main focal point of the community, what they'll be looking for and wanting to comment on. So if we kind of come to agreement on preliminary conclusions, you know, it might be helpful as well to spell out options and get input on those. Or, you know, a conclusion might be as well, like, you know, the working group doesn't see any recommendations we'd like to make at this stage. I mean, that's, you know, a recommendation or conclusion as such as well.
Okay, so let's say for example, with issue A, as a preliminary conclusion there, can we just say we are suggesting or recommending our new process?
Yes.
Okay, so we have something for issue A. Okay. So issue A, we have something, so we can move forward with that one. So for issue, God, sorry, this thing, the scrolling thing on the Adobe is taking forever. Okay, so issue A, we're good. Now, the disputes between registrants and admin contacts.
On issue B, there is, I'll pull it up shortly because James sent some suggestions, I think, there to the list or an email trying to get discussion started. But if you look here at page 25, one of the other possible recommendations that were raised, I think, some time ago is whether the group wants to recommend a PDP to require FIT2IT. It was one of the issue ideas. I think Mikey was spearheading that effort or that suggestion at that some point in time. But that's an idea that might be discussed.
All right. So let's say, so for a preliminary, something just to put in there in a conclusion section, this, we are considering the option of a PDP to require FIT2IT for all GTLDs. Would that be a fair summary? Does anybody
opposed to putting that in as a consideration, as conclusion for option for issue B. James?
So we're selecting options now, or are we testing for consensus on the options that we have?
Well, I'm just kind of putting in, I'm just trying to do is I want, if we can put something in the preliminary conclusion section for each of the issues,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not something fully, what's the best word? I'm trying to think of something which is fully worked out, but just rather than looking at a kind of issue A, we have something, issue B, we have something, issue C, we don't, but we should have something in there.
I'm not opposed to putting it on the table for discussion, but I think that when it comes time to actually deliberate the issue, I would have quite a bit to say on that. So.
Okay.
I was just curious where we, you know, what we were, what our objective was for this call. So,
okay.
If we're just looking to capture it and put it on the table, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the draft report, James. I'm just kind of going, right, you know, there's the sections with TBD
right.
in there, which is a bit kind of, you know, after I don't know how many months of telephone calls, if all we can manage is a TBD, then that's a bit strange. Michael Collins?
Yes, I wanted to add to that possibly, at least as the option, that the benefit would be that if we had a thick registry, we might also be able to require a secure method for a gaining registrar to acquire the registrant contact information so that we could eliminate the admin contact someone can approve the transfer. I think if we could eliminate having two different parties that could initiate a transfer, and then but only one party has ultimately got the final say, I think it would make this more secure. My understanding is that today, because the gaining registrar, we don't really have a good means for the gaining registrar to securely acquire the registrant contact information, we can't implement that. But I think if we had a thick registry, that might be possible. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this thick who is stuff? No? Okay. Issue C is something...
There was an email from James to the list, I think, as well, trying to kickstart some discussions. I'm just pulling it up, and
okay.
James is better positioned to indeed indicate if it was as well relating to coming to some kind of recommendations or conclusions.
And this is James speaking. Just for context, this was a response to discussion or an exchange that Michael and I had on a call back in early April, April 6th, I believe, where we were kind of, you know, I felt, Michael, maybe you can correct me, I felt we were kind of talking past each other a little bit because we were reading the question differently in what we were trying to resolve. And I think that, you know, I was trying to take a kind of a narrow or a little literal approach to what the question was asking, where I think Michael was touching on a broader issue.
Yeah, I would agree that we were trying to do two different things with this.
Okay. I'm looking at that email there.
Yeah, I can summarize, McKelly, real quickly so that we don't have to read it. I apologize, I went on a little bit here, but I think I was trying to address the standardization of procedure of how to implement when a registrant overrules an admin contact, and you know whether or not that could be uniform between registrars who all have their own internal procedures to implement that. Whereas Michael, I think, was discussing and jump in here if I'm wrong. Michael was just kind of discussing the problems that are encountered because there are two separate entities, or could be two separate entities, that are empowered to enact transfers, to be the transfer contact, but one prevails in any kind of a dispute. And so he was kind of talking more the abstract level of the issues that presented, where I was looking at more of the, you know, practical how to implement the changes without really looking at why those disputes arise in the first place.
Okay.
I'll just follow up with that if I could. I would say, this is Michael, I would say that that's correct, and I think that my goal was to try and avoid the potential disputes between a registrant and an admin contact, as opposed to enabling a procedure to resolve them, because I think that the inter-registrar transfer is often used in the aftermarket as a proof of control of a domain name, and essentially proof of ownership, and that gives the admin contact that that control when they might not in fact be authorized to sell a domain name or transfer control of a domain name. That's all.
Okay. Same, James?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And just, you know, kind of going a little bit further into the email, I think that, you know, one way to at least, you know, take a stab at this issue would be, you know, do we continue with this process where IRTP can be initiated by both the admin and the technical contact? Certainly, the ability to dispose of an asset would indicate that one has control over it. But I think that, you know, Michael's correct that this poses problems in the secondary markets. One idea that I threw out there, you know, at the bottom was, could this just be as simple as establishing that the AC can transfer the name, but only registrant can affect a change of control, whether that's to the same registrar or in conjunction with an inter-registrar transfer? You know, is this already understood in the existing policy, but there's a perception problem that we need to close the gap on? I just wanted to put that out there as one possible remedy, that we may be talking about a gap in perception.
Sorry, James, just before I let Michael go ahead, could you clarify what you mean by change of control? Are you talking about an update to the registrant?
Well, I'm trying to just, sorry, for clarification, I'm trying to just draw the distinction between a change of control, like change of registrant, versus maintaining the same registrant, admin, technical, and billing contacts, but just simply moving the name to a new registrar. Essentially, what the IRTP was designed to do. If we were to say, for example, preserve the ability of the admin contact to maintain control, ownership, contact, whatever, but simply move the name from one registrar to another, but reserve any change of control events, whether that's a change of account at one registrar or a change of control in conjunction with a transfer, or what we would call in the country code world, we would call it a trade, that only the registrant can affect a trade. And I think that would get to the heart of Michael's, what I perceive to be Michael's concern, which is that there's this blurry aspect of control here, or this divided control, and that two parties who could be different can dispose of the name.
Okay. I think I understand what you're talking about. Michael?
Yes, thank you. I think that would probably solve it as well as the alternate methods that we've discussed, but forgive me, but wouldn't that still require possibly a thick registry, because I'm not sure that that contact information is passed with the domain name. The registrant information, is that passed with the domain name transfer in a thin registry? I'm not sure.
No, it's not.
No.
But that's one thing I was going to mention, James. I mean, I understand where you were coming from, but I can see how you could easily end up accidentally or intentionally, depending on your technical implementation, with making significant changes to the registrant data simply because of your implementation of EPP. And it wouldn't even be intentional for thin registries. You wouldn't do it with thick, but for thin ones you would. If that makes sense. Anyway. Okay.
I guess, you know, this gets back to, I think, the initial question, which is, what is this charter question, you know, attempting to uncover? Because I think that what Michael has raised is an important issue, and it's a large issue. But, you know, was it the intention of the charter to take a more narrow view? And how widespread of a change do we want to recommend here? I think if there's an opportunity to simply and efficiently resolve the larger problem, we should take a look at that. But if you know, if it's going to drag us into some intractable issues like who is in thick versus thin, then I would hate to see this question, you know, receive no attention because it's you know, its fate is chained to some of those issues that have been in an impasse for years.
Okay. Anybody have any other thoughts on this? David?
No, really, at this point, I think we've exhausted the the debate. You know, I think James is onto something here in terms of his suggested course of action. But beyond that, I really have nothing more to add.
Okay. Guys, it's top of the hour. So, okay, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, it is, Marika. I was just hoping that maybe James would be willing to think a little bit more about it and maybe put forward like a proposal or a recommendation, you know, option that could be included for further discussion in the report as well to get some you know, input from the community on this train of thought.
Sure, I knew I couldn't escape without an action item, so I will take that.
It would also be helpful if Michael or whoever else, if they have any other thoughts on this, to, you know, throw their hat into the ring as well, just so we have. Go ahead.
Actually, I would be really, I would suggest perhaps Michael and I can work on this offline and send something back to the list. That way we can hammer out the different ideas and make sure that we're looking at them the same way, so we don't repeat the mistake that originally kicked off this discussion.
I'll be happy to help any way I can.
Okay, so basically you're taking ownership of this. You guys caused us. You can fix it.
Yeah.
Fine. No, okay, no argument from me on that one, guys. Right, as we've reached the end of the hour, I'm going to call it a day. I think it's good. Look, if we can please try to use the mailing list and just, you know, make... Just, you know, question things, put forward suggestions. If something's not clear, you know, throw it in there. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I think the only issue we didn't cover is issue C, and there I just want to encourage everyone to look at Matt's email and start a conversation as well on some of the suggestions he made in that email.
And yes, James, I am a tyrant, and you're going to have to deal with it. If you're feeling oppressed, stand up and run me over with your stupidly large car or something.
Oh, you're a benevolent dictator.
Yeah, well, you know. Now, guys, if you just please, you know, put your thoughts onto the mailing list. I mean, those of you who are new to the group, don't be afraid. Just throw your ideas out there. Worst thing that can happen is that somebody might disagree with you. I presume we're all meeting again next week. If there's anybody has any issues with the meeting next week, please, you know, let us know, and just try to keep discussing it on the list. And I'll speak to you all next week. Okay.
Thanks,
Michele.
All right. Thanks,
Michele.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.